Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point here at the midway point of our show. So we start hour number three with Stanford Steve, who we've talked to in the past and really have enjoyed our conversations with him. And, of course, he is a part of SportsCenter, the late-night SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. He does other things that we're going to get into, and he now joins us on the show. Steve, how you doing?
Excellent, fellas. How we doing?
Oh, we're doing awesome. 2+ months at home, so everybody's doing things differently as you guys are. Let me just start off by saying this. I've really enjoyed, obviously the country has really enjoyed The Last Dance, but I have really enjoyed in these times, Steve, that you guys, at least I'll speak for myself, are able to capture me to make sure I stay with you guys and don't turn away, because I've enjoyed your interviews you've had and how you've handled kind of the follow-up. It's almost like the post-show game to The Last Dance. I've really enjoyed that as everything wrapped up this past Sunday.
Well, I appreciate you guys hanging around. It's really tough. It's with the editing process. I don't know if you've read the stuff about The Last Dance, the stuff that they ran into, in the last – I mean, he didn't submit episode 10 until last Wednesday, I think, or Thursday. So, just with the pandemic hitting everybody, I mean, shoot, I'm in my garage right now trying to hide from my kids to talk to you guys. So I appreciate you giving me a breather. But, hey, like I said, though, going back to the Last Dance stuff, the time is so, precious to the special, and they have all the time. So, we couldn't even get a promo in during the airing, coming back from break. We had to pray that people were just going to stay through the credits, and maybe we could speed the credits up just to let people know. I tried some things on Twitter just to let people know to hang out, but – a lot of people Sunday night, I know people are working from home now, but Sunday night, people see credits on something, they're gone.
Yeah.
So we tried to get word out. Scott, did some stuff. I mean, he mentioned the idea of, when Game of Thrones was going on, that, people were doing post-show breakdowns there and the post-show recap. So, I mean, we tried to do that, go all in. I'm fortunate for people like Jackie McMullen, Michael Wilbon, Steve Kerr, all these people that have just, helped us out and FaceTiming from home or Skyping from home. I'm sure you guys have run into the same thing with the phone interviews and all that stuff. So it was a really fun thing to do, knowing how many people were going to be watching it and knowing how many people didn't want it to end. You just every week, everybody just can't wait till next week. So we just tried to prolong it, show an excerpt from next week, and just try to deep dive, maybe something you didn't get inside the episode. We did a little longer deep dive with Scott with the highlights, since we can't do any highlights of live events now.
Yeah, I thought the Barkley interview was one that stood out to me as well. We have found through this that, look, we're sitting here doing 4 hours of sports talk radio a day, 5 days a week with, no live sports until here recently to really talk about through all of this. But one thing that's come out of this, Steve, is we've had some really incredible, Mookie Betts, David Price, Eddie George, Jeff Fisher, a lot of great guests come on here. I could keep going. And just that relaxed feel, and just have gone down some rabbit holes that you never could go down in the past because of time constraints. And they whether it's on their end or our end, and just really get guests to open up and have just some unique interviews. Have you guys experience that as well? I know television's a little bit different dynamic, but have you experienced a little bit of the same?
100%. But what's crazy is, I mean, you guys mentioned you're doing it for 4 hours every day. We're doing it every, it's a process to try and tape people and all that stuff for TV. But I don't think it hit us until last week. We had James Corden on, with the Late Late Show, and we're taping with him, and he's in his freaking garage doing a national show, and we're just sitting there, and he's just sitting with his with his hand on his mouth, I felt like I've had better interviews talking to people, because Nick Saban said it last night. We're talking to him from his house, and he's like, I just feel more relaxed. And I'm like, that's not hard for coach to do, but it's just I think even booking guests, I'm sure your producers feel the same thing, hey, you know, maybe not in 15 minutes, but we're flexible. You know, we'll make it work. You know, people have more time on their hands as long as, you know, things are set at home. That's where I'm running into trouble, is I got my kids at home and homeschool. My wife's trying to work from home, and then I'm going into work at night. We're going into the studio every night, which I feel very fortunate to do. But no doubt about it, the interviews have been just way more authentic, not rushed. And I just think people are more thoughtful because they have that much more time on their hands. And, you know, I keep going back to Saban, but Saban said it last night, you know, it's just, you know, he's in a profession where family time isn't a priority. And now he just couldn't talk about how thankful he is. And I mean, for a guy that works nights and misses dinner every night with my kids, I've been able to hang home. You know, we do a Zoom call now and, you know, try and stay at work as less as possible as far as meeting times go. So I think there's been a lot of more feelings of, you know, being more authentic. And I think it's good for people to take a step back. You know, obviously, you know, other stuff is going on, you know, way more negative. But just to take a step back and maybe look yourself in the mirror a couple more times a day and realize, you know, maybe I, you know, don't take as many things for granted. So it has been refreshing in that essence for sure.
ESPN Stanford Steve on the line with us. I think the last time we spoke with you, I told you how much I enjoy Bad Beats. I mean, I just absolutely love that segment. Bad Beats are tough during this pandemic, but I know you do a lot of stuff, you know, when it's involved with betting and a part of shows and that I've watched you on. You guys do a really good job. Something we've been talking about here, and we have been today, this week, and throughout all this, is now that we're starting to get the feel, Steve, that a lot of this is coming back, and whether it's hockey, because we're in a hockey market, we have a professional hockey team here, or the NBA, or these sports coming back, what is it going to look like, you know, with 3+ months of these athletes, where everything came to a screeching halt, and we're trying to figure out, especially if the NBA and NHL pick up in playoffs, you know, like they just scrap finishing up their regular season. We're talking about now it's a round robin tournament where elimination's at stake. And like I said, you don't know what you're going to get coming back from this. How difficult will it make will it feel a lot like preseason games, assessing lines and trying to, you know, the gambling aspect of not knowing what the heck these teams are going to look like coming out of this?
Yeah, it's a total stay away for me from the start. first off, I don't know how you guys feel. I'm sure you have plenty of discussions, but we can't have a single elimination tournament to raise the Stanley Cup. That cannot happen. But from the gambling aspect, I feel like there's just so much unknown. You know, I mean, here's the biggest thing is how many of these athletes have their trainers living with them, you know, during the season? And then how many of those trainers said, you know what, it's going to be a while, I'm going to leave. Because we're in a day and age where these guys do whatever. They're so regimented in their routines that the personal trainers are the most important thing to me. So I look at that as, you know, obviously guys are going to be in tip-top shape. I know there's been talk about the NBA that they need to play some regular season games to get to the regional market sales. You know, so everybody gets some of that money. The NHL has been as hush hush as anybody. But gambling wise, it's a stay away for me, man. Like people want to go out and throw all their money. I mean, I know I got a lot more money in my pocket from not betting on NBA playoffs. I'll tell you that. It's a slow go for me. You know, we got futures posted now for college football and NFL season win totals. Like I don't know who's on what team. You know, teams didn't even have college football. You don't have anybody that had spring ball. You know, I mean, freshmen, how are they going to do? You know, coming in that were supposedly all these high recruits. And, you know, that's their learning time. You got kids coming in early now for spring ball to do all that adaptation and learning of the playbooks and you know, in the concepts. That's gone. These guys are going to have to learn, you know, learn it under fire. And I don't think that's, at least for me, I don't feel confident in having to wager money on stuff like that when you have so many intangibles that are unknown.
Talking to Steve Coughlin, known as Stanford Steve from SportsCenter. And, of course, you see him on Scott Van Pelt. You've seen a lot, especially if you're watching The Last Dance. He's coming on right after those shows. So, Steve, I want to ask you, from sort of the wagering, the odds-making angle of this thing, we know how random the NHL playoffs can be to start with. Mm. And then you add possibly a 2 out of 3, which is what is being widely talked about for sort of a play-in to get to the first round. And talk about, in your mind, how you would try to set the odds, just knowing all of these random things that you have in a normal season. And then take, for example, you could have Montreal with a great goalie, but not a great team, but a 2 out of 3 against a much more powerful team on paper in the Maple Leafs. A lot of people think that Montreal would have a legit shot, even though on paper they would be a big underdog.
And you're not factoring in home ice or home court advantages in this.
That's exactly where I was going. I mean, I think when it gets down to it, you know, home ice might mean less than, obviously, you guys have one of the best home crowds in all the league, and you don't want to hear that said. But I think home ice, just because of the mentality of hockey players of not, you know, caring less about things like that, I think it means less than, you know, basketball. So you can't even factor in home ice, home goalie, stuff like that, because, you know, we're going to have, you know, crickets in the stands. So it's, I mean, 2 or 3, I mean, that's something I don't even remember. One thing I do wish, especially, I mean, the NHL is built off those 7-game marathons, but a nice 5-game series in the first round, I don't think would hurt anybody to get in the mix. But when you talk to these, you know, best out of three to get in the playoffs, I mean, you throw everything out the window. I mean, that's flip of the coin to me. You mentioned the hot goalie. You mentioned offensive firepower that the Leafs might have. We know the adage that, you know, great defense, you know, beats great offense all the time. So that's another stay away for me, man. That's hard. I mean, that's why those guys in the desert get paid what they got to do. They can make those odds, and then we can partake if we want when we see maybe an advantage or two.
Well, here's something that is always a factor in the great bad beats, right? A tough, controversial call by an official. So regardless of the sport, but let's say basketball or hockey, you don't have the crowd that's influencing it psychologically, something that the official would have to fight, right? It's always a great debate, is how much are officials swayed by the roar of the crowd for the home team. So imagine officiating with no crowd. I think that's pretty interesting, and you could have a call that would be pretty controversial, but you won't have the reaction of the crowd.
Absolutely. And then what are we going to do with all the trash talking on the field? I mean, hockey players, I love them, but on the hockey ice, there's more trash talk on there than there is maybe in any sport. So, you know, with no crowd noise, how much are those microphones going to be picked up? And then what I've been really curious about is, you know, they're talking about what's getting mic'd up, what's not. I mean, is it possible that they can put these on a little bit of tape delay? And then what does that do to live betting? Can you only live bet, you know, and at the end of periods, at the end of quarters, at halftime? So the referees, I mean, I know that when I've been out to summer league, that's more of a up and comer referees doing those games. So it's more of a high school atmosphere. But the NBA is in its own tier when it comes to players and referees conversation on the court. Because, I mean, you know, it feels like it's nonstop when you're watching it with crowd noise. I can't imagine what we're going to hear, with no crowd noise. So, yeah, that's a fascinating aspect that I can't wait to see how it plays out and what do we do to try and, you know, not let it affect the way we're watching a game.
Steve, I'm sure you've answered this question many times, but for people that maybe have never heard the origin of it, can you give us the background? Where did the concept of bad beats come from?
Oh, well, Scott and I and Ryan Russillo, I was their producer on radio for years, earlier in around 2010. 2011, and Scott had the idea of trying to do bad beats on the radio. We used to just back end an hour, you know, where you have a hard out and try and get, you know, email suggestions and stuff like that. We just couldn't do it on radio. You know, the visual aspect is what makes it. So when Scott said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this SportsCenter and I want you to come with me, And, you know, I said, you know, what the hell am I going to do? You know, I never worked on TV or anything. He's like, no, we're going to do Bad Beats, and you're going to be part of it. I'm like, really? He's like, I told him I'm not doing the show if we can't do Bad Beats. So it all goes to Scott. It was, you know, his idea, and he said we were going to do it, and he got them to buy in to do it. And from there, it's just blown into what everyone mentions when, you know, when our show comes up. Diana Taurasi was doing an interview the other night, and, you know, for The Last Dance, she talks about how she stays up on Monday nights to watch Bad Beats. Like, it's just resonated with the most random people. But I think people love it because it's funny and it's horrific if you're in the moment and you've laid a couple shekels on a game and you know that pain and that feeling. So it's a mixture of emotions that a lot of people have endured. So it all goes to Scott. I've just been along for the ride. It's a great process. We've tried to, you know, dabble in looking back at old point spreads during Michael Jordan's, you know, career. We got a great research staff.
What was the first one you guys ever did? Do you remember, Steve?
The first one that we ever did was Colorado State, and it was Sam Houston State. It was one of those schools down in the southeast, and we had to lift the video from the Colorado State website because it wasn't on TV. And one of our researchers was like, we have to check this out because there's a blocked punt with 12 seconds left, and then they take a knee or something like that. So it was, yeah, we lifted the video from the school's website, like, you know, one of those, you know, live stream videos. But, yeah, that was the first one we did. Oh, man, I can't remember who they were playing. Colorado State, whatever it was, 22.
I'm sure it was great quality.
Oh, it actually wasn't horrible. I mean, streaming's come a long way, especially in these last 5 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean – we put on a lot worse, I'll tell you that.
We're talking to Stanford Steve, of course, VSPN and the SVP Sports Center, Bad Beats, as we're sitting here discussing. So you mentioned the Jordan, you know, finding old point spreads from the Jordan era. So I'm sitting there, and I've been watching these after The Last Dance, and I love the Scott's delivery is fantastic, number one. Mm-hmm. But I love the back and forth between you two. And I find myself cringing as it transpires, of like it's a brand new game that I'm seeing for the first time, even though these are all, you know, 20 plus years old. Have you found yourself going through that of like, man, oh, it hurts all over again?
Well, you know what's really funny is I was actually in college, so I didn't bet on games. I didn't have any money, and, you know, I couldn't. But to hear my buddy's reactions from home, and, you know, the next day, or watching the show live, and it's just incredible how guys remember those Jordan-specific games. Like, the Jazz one we did the other night, my buddy was like, I can't. Because it was just one of, I mean, if you pay attention, that's what made, you know, it's so maddening with Jordan. If you back him, you knew you had to give points, and then you get a backdoor three by the Jazz to end the game. It's what it is in every sport. It's just amazing to see. Yeah, it's amazing to see people's emotions still remember how exactly they felt. I have people reaching out. They knew exactly where they were when they were watching that game, what day of the week it was on. Like, it's pretty bad. You know, gamblers do have a really good memory, and a lot of times it brings on a lot more pain than need be.
Something you brought up earlier that I'm just curious about as we navigate through these difficult times, you guys have been in the studio. We've been working from home, doing radio. That's how I forgot what our studio even looks like. But what is the setup like? We see you and we see Scott on camera and everything looks normal, but what has everything kind of been like behind the scenes as it pertains to social distancing and wearing masks and just some of the protocols?
Bare bones, man. Bare bones. We normally have, I'll go backwards. So, like, when we come on the air, right, you know, it's Scott and I in the studio. I have my own desk. I'm off to the side. He's at his desk. And we probably have six camera people, seven maybe. You know, we have a person that, you know, takes care of our audio up there. And we have a prompter that does the prompter. And, you know, now we have the prompter, the person that gives us our earpieces, and two camera people. I mean, it's just minimal. We're using two cameras that whole show, which is a credit to our director, Joe, and his staff that have been able to make the show still look pretty darn creative, you know, with these times. And then our show staff is, I mean, usually in screening, like our first off, we start the day with a 5:30 meeting on campus. That's now a phone call. And that, when I go in, you know, usually in our conference room where we watch games every night, we usually have like 10 or 11 people in there, and we're down to like four. So, you know, we got people on the phone. We have a conference call live going on in the conference room. Obviously, there's not a lot of games to watch, but we're watching whatever needs to be on. And then in screening, where all the highlights are cut, there's probably 70 people in there on a night between the, you know, the live game, you know, the 11 o'clock Sports Center, our Sports Center, the LA Sports Center, and then, like, you know, the get-up crew comes in, you know, probably at 2 in the morning. So there's probably 70, 80 people in there on a given night. And last night I walked through there, and there were six people. And they're all on their show. Everybody's, you know, wearing their face masks. The cafeteria is as desolate as I've ever seen. It's kind of depressing. You know, we just got to go over and see what they're making that night. But, I mean, I said earlier, I feel fortunate to be able to go in. It's been able to keep my mind right. You know, like I said, I got three girls all in the age of six, so you can imagine how fast I'm running my car to go to work every night to get a little bit of sanity. But it is bare bones, but we've tried to, you know, do our best, and that's what makes the Last Dance shows so awesome to hear from people that are watching and liking them, is that we've been able to do them with minimal help. And the technology, you know, we're coming right into people. I mean, we have Bob Costas on the other night, and he's in his kitchen. So we've gone to any length to try and, you know, give the people something to watch and something to laugh at and something to learn from, in this time where we know, you know, we're probably getting a lot more, different eyeballs than we normally get.
Steve, before we let you go, I do want to ask you about this, the Last Dance. And we saw the other night, Dennis Rodman leaves practice to go to wrestling. To go to WCW Monday Nitro. So earlier today, I actually talked to Eric Bischoff, who was the president of WCW at the time and was behind the scenes in all of this. And we brought up, we played a clip, our producer played a clip of Bob Costas just going nuts on Rodman and Karl Malone, you know, wrestling each other on the court. And Bischoff said that, well,
at the quote where he said, how can you lower yourself to something like that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and basically calling wrestling fake and all this. And and Bischoff told us today that he had to be careful of how he approached everything with Rodman and Malone, because his boss was Turner, and Turner had to deal with the NBA. But he said, you know, if you wanted to get a little physical with Carl and kind of poke the bear a little bit on the court, that wouldn't be a bad thing. So essentially I took that as Eric Bischoff saying he was trying to bring wrestling into a basketball game. And I thought that was fascinating.
I'll tell you what, I've never put these wrestling guys. You talk about being creative and trying to turn the worm. Those guys are always a step ahead. I can't ever, even growing up, I couldn't figure out the storylines watching wrestling. So I always pick those guys up as from storyline builders and needle and poking the bear. They're always a step ahead, no doubt.
Turn the worm. I see what you did there, Steve. Your time is up, sir. You must get back to the girls. We let you a reprieve of about 20 minutes.
Mac and cheese, I gotta make.
Did you say three daughters under the age of six?
Yes, sir. My middle one just turned four on Saturday. I got a six-year-old. I got a 6-, 4-year-old, and a 10-month-old.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Mad props to you, my man.
And, and we're trying a virtual house shop because we're moving. The show's moving to D.C. This summer. So we're having a great time.
Hey, thanks for the visit, as always. Good to talk to you. And continue to be safe, you and the family, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. I'm reaching out next time I come down to Nash Vegas. So
we'll be here. You do that.
All right.
That is Stanford Steve. You right there, ESPN, of course, as you just heard, on the Late Night Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt, and he's a part of some of their gambling shows as well. Always good to talk to him. It's always fun, those interviews. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Listen up if you own or manage a small business, and if you are safely open, you want to let people know about it. Well, we've got Free Business Friday. We've already had three Fridays in a row of Free Business Friday, and it has been a huge hit here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're now offering for you to get involved. Yeah, today is Tuesday. Jump in there now and be a part of this Friday's Free Business Friday. And it is free advertising to local businesses that are open and working. That is no cost, no catch to you. It doesn't get any better than that. You can visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. That's thegamenashville.com/FBF. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. Really good stuff there from Stanford Steve from ESPN. We always enjoy our conversations with him. We're able to kind of go down some rabbit holes that we typically don't go down with guests. And the one thing that is in, that is interesting is the whole gambling aspect, because we know gambling is massive in this country, and it's massive when it comes to sports. And to know that, you know, as we've talked about it over the years, that you get a certain amount of points for a home ice or home field or home court advantage, and how sometimes, you know, home court in this case is the best advantage in sports. If you look at the stats and the numbers for basketball, they seem to, for whatever reason, have the best home advantage. How all that gets tossed out the window, all these great home places that we think about where teams thrive at home, is all for naught. I mean, that is not going to factor in when, you know, when these sports come back. And that is going to be interesting. And the other element is not knowing what the heck these teams, how they're going to respond after being, you know, off for three months or more. And those are, and as you just heard Stanford Steve, he is heavily involved in the gambling aspect on ESPN. And he said, yeah, that's going to be a stay away for a while. It's going to be, I'm going to have to ease into that one.
If you're smart, but we know people won't be able to resist just the action, the stimulation that you get, you know, hopefully, you know, sensibly. But I think it won't stop people from diving in there, especially going through the withdrawal that we have.
Especially when you look at what happened this past weekend.
I mean, right.
Vegas had bettors and bookmakers had a very busy weekend because of NASCAR and UFC. Mm-hmm. And so I hear what he's saying, that the smart ones will stay away and let it play out. But there's going to be some people that are just itching and going to jump back in.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of people itching and just jumping in.
What do you guys think of the officiating question I asked?
That was very interesting. That was something I hadn't really thought about.
Well, let's give a couple of examples. All right, let's say you're at Rupp Arena, and there's 24,000 fans cheering for the Big Blue. There's a huge block charge call at the basket with a Kentucky player going up for a dunk. He lays it in. It's in. It's either basket's good and a foul, or it's offensive foul, wave off the basket. Now, subconsciously, the referee has to know that if he calls the charge, he's going to have 24,000 people calling boos, right? They're going to rain down with the boos all over the place. And he also knows that if he counts the bucket in a foul, he's going to hear a great roar from the crowd. I would imagine that the best referees can block all that out and make the sensible call. But psychologically, I've always wondered how that works in a game. When we talk about home court advantage, right? So that would be completely wiped out of the game in the NBA, right? The block charge, you're going to have no reaction other than from the two teams, which might be enough to get to some referees. But I just wonder, when you erase all of that, or if you wave a goal off in the NHL because you thought it was goalie interference or something like that, I just wonder if that would have any impact on a game.
I thought it was a fascinating question. It's really something I haven't thought about until you brought it up, and now I'm really intrigued by that, because I do think it's an interesting dynamic, because I'll just, full disclosure, you know what the first two things I thought of when you, after you had asked that question? Music City Miracle. Like, I was there. Like, you knew they were not coming back. I mean, that there's no way they were coming back and calling that a forward line. There's no way. And especially, I mean, now, if it was obvious, that's one thing. But, I mean, to, you know, when you have a play that is a razor's edge, and it literally can go either way, that atmosphere at that time, like I said, I was there. It's the loudest I've ever heard that stadium. It was insane. People were losing their minds. I thought the place was hopping down, you know, down the street. That's how crazy it was. You just knew, being there, they were not coming back and saying, you know, that play didn't count. You just knew it. And I'm not saying it's a bad call. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that I disagree with it. No, I'm not. But it is, it's very, very, very close. And because it was here and because of what was happening, I don't know if it swayed or not, but I just had the feeling at the time, there's no way, and you know what, they're coming back and saying that play doesn't stand. And the other one I thought of is, what if game one of the Stanley Cup final in 2017 was in Nashville?
Oh, yeah.
Same call?
Wow.
Same call, yeah, on Forsberg?
I never really thought of it that way. That's a good
offside
point.
Now, remember, those people aren't in Nashville that are in the Situation Room in Toronto. They're removed from it. But, of course, you do have the, you know, you have the officials on the ice that have to go out and tell everybody.
They're smart enough to know that if they
have input too, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, they're smart enough to know that if they, and they're going to get it right. They want to get it right. They're not going to, I mean, they're going to look at the evidence that they have, but if they're unsure on a call and they know that if they overturn it or they make a decision that they shouldn't make, that they're sending those officials basically out to slaughter. So I would hope that they think about that.
Just remember what Stanford Steve just said to us. And I don't know how many Preds games he's been to. I think we got into that maybe the last time we talked to him, how much he just said he loves Nashville and coming to Nashville. And he gave props to the Predators. He said, you guys might have the best home ice in the entire league. Let's go back 3 years ago, which is what we're doing on the station, right, on Friday.
Which I think is around the time we had him on, because I was producing this show at the time when we had him on.
I think it was well after that. I think it was after that. I don't remember when. I don't feel like it's been 3 years.
I feel like it's been two and a half.
Maybe. But what was everybody talking about? What was everybody talking about? Not just here. What was everybody, as we've talked about for 3 years with people? Well, everybody was talking about the atmosphere in Nashville. Everybody was talking about the Bridgestone party. Arena. Everybody was talking about how crazy it was here, even to this day. So I ask you, to your question, Willie, if game one was here, and all that being said, and that had been one of these storylines about the Stanley Cup playoffs and this Predators team, and here we are in the biggest stage in game one, do they still say Forsberg? Offsides?
I don't know. That, to me, those two examples are one type of example where you got to face the reaction. But at least in those, you're consulting with people, you have time to go through it, and you're making the decision. You're thinking about it, right? The ones that I think about, too, are just as interesting are the ones where you got to make the call in a second, right? It happens right in front of you. How much influence does the crowd have on those? Like the block charge, where you see it in real time. You can't go back and look at the replay, right? It's boom. It's at a block or a charge. Or let's give you one in hockey, right? I used to think about this all the time. Joe Louis Arena, right? Pavel Datsyuk gets tripped, or Steve Yzerman gets tripped by a Predator. The whole crowd goes, oh, you know, a smart crowd is going to be all over it. Call the penalty. Where's the arm, right? It happens in Nashville, too. Right, if Victor Arvidsson gets tripped, how many officials are influenced by that moment where they know everybody rooting for the home team thinks that should be a penalty, right? And sometimes I wonder if that influences the arm going up for a penalty in that moment. You won't have that in games with no fans. So there's the moment, there's that quick reaction in real time, and then there's the ones you're talking about, Darren, where you there's a buildup, right? The crowd is rumbling, and they're waiting for the last decision, and you got to face the crowd and make that. So there's two different dynamics, which I think are both fascinating.
Right. That is the other part. Sometimes it's not about the moment. Sometimes it's about the buildup to that call. Like maybe there's been a couple of questionable or bad calls prior to that where the coach and the fan base has absolutely laid into you for the last 5 minutes. And then, you know, as we – what was it – what's Pete Weber's line? It's a fantastic – that's the oh, my gosh, the makeup company. That's – that's a
Mary Kay call.
Yeah, thank you. Jeez. I'm sitting there going, pink Cadillac. Mary Kay call, right? It's the makeup call.
Yeah.
So that does happen. And so if there is none of that reaction, now you may still get an earful from a coach or a player, but if you don't have 17,000 or 17,000 plus people breathing down your neck and screaming at you for 5 minutes, you do wonder, like, how much will that change things in these playoff scenarios when these leagues come back?
Well, and
they are human beings. They're not robots. Anytime the human element is in play, you don't tell me that doesn't factor in. Because
sure
it does.
Sure it does. But here's another part of this, too. You know, something we joked about with Willie of, you know, Willie calling a game and the players on the ice, you know, he criticized, but he said, well, it was an ill-advised shot by Forsberg. And Forsberg turns around and goes, well, you weren't down here. Or, you know, he hears him. Who's to say that the referees getting together, that the bench won't hear them, and that all of a sudden you have a coach or a player that's, you know, yelling across the rink because they can hear the conversation? I mean, that's another part of this.
I don't think it's in hockey, but it could be in basketball.
Sure.
Basketball.
Because your play-by-play guys are right there at center court.
Right
well, there. We saw it in the UFC that you had –
It was, wasn't it Daniel Cormier?
Yeah.
His comments, and it was Greg Hardy that was listening?
Yep. And then last week I was watching, and the color analyst said something, and one of the coaches was like, you know, heard it and said something to him because he was being critical. He was being critical of something they were doing. And then he's like, well, I apologize for that. I mean, those are things. So to this whole conversation about the crowd's not there to influence, I wonder if there's more, and if you're a good official, you just tune that out. You tune out the bench. You tune out what the players and coach are saying. But I do wonder if that's going to end up factoring in.
I guess we're going to find out, hopefully, sooner rather than later, right? Hopefully.
I hope. Even though, I got racing to watch today. So
yeah.
Got the racing. Xfinity Series. It may rain.
2 days in a row.
Yeah, rain's a factor. They've already moved up the race 2 hours to try and get it in, but rain.
Come on, we waited all this time to have a race.
I know.
We can't have rain. Come on.
They have a doubleheader tomorrow, though, so that could work.
Hey, guys, I don't know if you saw this, but Jeff Passan, who's done some incredible reporting during these times, got a look at the handbook that was secret. I guess he secretly got a look at it. This has not been ratified by the players, but all the suggested things that you shouldn't do on the baseball field, which obviously is going to become a guide as it goes down the chain, right?
I saw
all the
that.
Way
That's
down to 8-year-olds,
so
right? No, you're not even allowed to elbow bump somebody.
Can't spit. No seeds.
No spitting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No spitting. No sunflower seeds.
No tobacco.
No tobacco.
Can't do any of
no
that.
No hugs.
No.
What
hugs,
about home
no
plate?
Fist bump.
What if there's a walk off?
No.
No hugs.
Can't do anything.
Can't do
nothing.
Nope.
Nada.
Vibes.
Yeah, they won't let you. They won't let them do anything. What happens if that happens? That's what I want to know. Like, if you slip up, because you're so used to that, you're so used to high-fiving.
I know
a guy.
it's such a natural reaction.
Right.
So what happens? Like, is that a penalty? Does the run not count? Like, does it?
No, it's nothing like that. But I think it's just trying to change people's habits.
I was watching
the mayor. And his task force yesterday, he fielded a question. It was a great question, right, from one of the members of the media. You know, are you getting complaints from people that some places aren't following these guidelines. And they said, yeah. So what they do is they'll call that place. Maybe it's a place of business, and they just give them a little talk. You know, hey, we've got this complaint. Is this going on? Are you aware of these guidelines? And they say sometimes they're not. They weren't aware of the guidelines, or at least they're telling them they weren't aware. So they get a warning, right? And they said, well, if they're like, are there going to be sanctions for some of these places if they keep this up? And that's what they said. You're going to get a warning, and if we end up having to call that place again, then we're going to have to look into some sort of discipline for that. So I would imagine it's going to take some getting used to for baseball players to go through a whole game with no high fives and no hugs, no sunflower seeds. What the heck are these guys going to do in the dugout with no sunflower seeds?
A lot of gum.
a lot of gum.
I guess a lot of gum.
All right, we'll come back and put a bow on the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Also hear from Austin Watson to start the final hour of the program right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Austin Watson will kick off our fourth and final hour here on this Tuesday afternoon. Some news that's kind of making its rounds here involving sports. Let's start with the Triple Crown in horse racing. Belmont Stakes, which is traditionally the last leg of the Triple Crown, will actually begin to be the first leg of the Triple Crown on June 20th to get things going in the horse racing world. Not in front of fans, but Belmont Stakes will be the first leg on June 20th. So that is interesting. Also, Texas Athletic Director Ross Bork, who used to be the AD at Western Kentucky, Ole Miss, and now Texas A&M, has said both ADs at Colorado and Fresno State have told him their plan is to absolutely play at Kyle Field this fall. So Colorado and Fresno State telling Texas A&M they will be there to take on the Aggies this year, this fall. Also, Mercedes-Benz, the Superdome, right? That sponsorship there in New Orleans, evidently no more. Mercedes-Benz dropping their name from the Superdome. There will be a new sponsor down in New Orleans around that facility. So we've known it as the Mercedes-Benz Dome, Superdome, for a good while. Not anymore. I guess they're still sticking in Atlanta, but in New Orleans, it will be a new name.
Yeah, so I mean, I was wondering how long that was going to they were going to sponsor two stadiums, because that's not cheap.
No.
And it makes sense for them to go with the newer one, which is what they've done in Atlanta. So I was actually reading something on that, you know, the process has been underway to get a new naming rights sponsor for the Superdome. There are some other renovations. They're going to do some major renovations to the Superdome. And, you know, they've done a good job with that over the years. Of course, we know the major one that happened after Katrina, that because it had so much damage to it, that they did that. But they've done a pretty good job. I've been there. I'm sure you guys have too. But it's still a nice facility, considering it, you know, was opened in the 70s. So it's just one of those things that they've continued to update over the years. But if they want to keep getting these big events and Super Bowls, they got to do even more.
Yep. And it looks like now also there's whispers out there in the college basketball world that Kentucky and Michigan, who were set to play this upcoming season, will not play. So,
because of this, or because of
this the game that was supposed to be in London?
Maybe.
Because they had a 3-year series, and I know 1 year was in Ann Arbor, 1 year was in Lexington and Rupp Arena, and one of the years was in London. So my guess, and I'm just guessing because I just saw this a couple of minutes ago, that it's maybe this was the first year was supposed to be in London, and so that would make sense, right?
You have very little discussion about the status of college basketball. It's all about college football, right? But you have the other fall sports that never get mentioned, right? Soccer for women, which is a huge women's sport, second only to women's basketball. That's probably the next highest profile sport that there is, maybe softball in the spring. You have other fall sports going on. You know, golf is fall and spring. I guess golf, in theory, you could play. But college basketball, it's pretty high profile. You don't hear a whole lot of, hey, do we have to schedule different? Are we going to be able to have the conference up? It's like they haven't even gotten to that yet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just hoping that by then, by November, that you could play. But are we going to have fans for college basketball games?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if you can have 24,000 in Rupp Arena. I mean, maybe you could have 50% or 30% by then. I don't know.
Yeah, good question.
The more that you read, it's really going to become about, because the chances of a vaccine by even January 1 are somewhat unrealistic. Hopefully, maybe you could have the formula by then, but it's still going to take time before it's available to everybody. So it's about living with the virus. It's about managing, changing people's habits to limit the risk, and, you know, doing what you can, right? Collectively, with, you know, here's what's off limits, here's what we can do, and everybody pay attention to this. So it's about living with it.
Let's go to Jules. Jules wants to weigh in on the show. What's up?
Hey guys, I just wanted to. I don't know if you guys realize this, but like how much the Nashville Predators season can relate to the Tennessee Titans season last year, on like how Rene got benched, but Saros took over his starting job towards the end, and obviously Tannehill took over for Mariota, and how the Preds started to find their rhythm towards the end, and so did the Titans. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, it's not a bad comparison at all, Jules. Thank you for the phone call. And the Predators got into rhythm. Yeah, it was never made official that, you know, it's not like Pekka was John Hines was out there declaring that Pekka is now the backup and UC Saros is the starter. It's just how it played out. And UC, they were playing well. He was playing well. And so that's how it works. Sometimes in the sport, you just stay with the hot hand and, you know, with that being said, they were playing well. And we've talked to players. We just spoke with John Hines last week, and everybody seems to be on the same page that they all agree they were indeed playing their best brand of hockey, and things did feel like it was coming together, unfortunately, right at the stoppage point. So, and then, you know, to his point with the Titans, there's no doubt that the Ryan Tannehill move did indeed, I don't think it's going out on a limb, say it saved their season. That move, that Denver Broncos game, that, you know, while it was brutal to watch and they got shut out, it may have been that changing of the guard that changed their whole season. And, of course, you know, it led them to get all the way to the doorstep of possibly, you know, getting to the Super Bowl, which ended in Kansas City. So not a bad comparison.
I think it's a very interesting one, and I think it's one that you would have heard a lot of had there not been a pause. Right, because it's very likely that if the Predators had gotten into the playoffs, the direction they were going, it was going to be UC Saros continuing along the path he was going. He was giving them a chance to win every night. He was playing top level. And Pekka Rinne had, because he had a couple of rough starts in there while this was going on, it was really hard to not play UC Saros. I mean, you're wondering, when was the next game that Pekka Rinne was going to get back in there? But now that you've stopped everything and you're starting everything over, who knows? As we were talking about during our 11 o'clock hour, you know, is there anything – you can argue whether there's momentum in any sport anyway, but especially after a three-month layoff, everybody's starting over. So who's to say that Pekka Rinne doesn't get an opportunity and jump in there and get off to a good start where, hey, maybe you would look at him playing in the playoffs, where that was going to be very unlikely – had the season not paused. True?
Yep.
Very true. Yeah, I like the comparison. I mean, it's fun to see those parallels, you know, between the two teams. And, you know, I'll even go a step further. I remember having a conversation with Roman Josi last year for a piece I was doing with the Titans. And the comparison of the Titans then to what they did, what we're talking about, you know, on Friday 3 years ago, that there are a lot of similarities there of all that. So it's fun to relate those two teams together and get those similarities.
We'll come back and start the fourth and final hour with Austin Watson. Speaking of the Predators, you'll hear from some of the things that he said. yesterday with the local media on his Zoom call. And also, we'll get into a little bit deeper dive. As I said at the beginning of the show, there was an interview conducted in Salt Lake City. We'll hear some things that were said, and, you know, that the so-called food poisoning, Pizzagate, whatever you want to call it, it's being refuted by this sports talk show yesterday in Salt Lake City, at least the guest they had on, who was the manager or assistant manager at Pizza Hut at the time. So those are things on tap for the final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game.